No, there's an immediate need. I don't think we should focus on one person. What Haiti needs
right
now
10
is somebody with a lot of serenity.
But let me ask Jean Sainville the same question is your thoughts on Wyclef Jean running. 10 seconds.
Wyclef Jean is hiding the reality. So he's there to as a smokescreen so that those reports you just played about what's happening in the camps, people don't talk about it. So what Vox Sambu is saying about what's happening in the north, people don't talk about it. So it's a smokescreen so that the real issues are not raised.
We want to thank you all for being with us. Jean Sainville speaking to us from Ottawa, his website, godisnotwhite.com. We also want to thank Vox Sambu, as well as our guest, Mark Schuller, here in New York. That does it for the show. I'm Amy Goodman with Sharif Abdelkadous. Thanks for joining us.
And it's 2 minutes after 6 o'clock. You're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook. It's time for Off the Wall. And good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. Tonight we present the final part of the Bosnia special. That's right. We went to Bosnia. What of it? We go all over the world. We've been to North Korea and Cuba. And yeah, Bosnia. No big deal. Yes, my friend Kyle and I were over there this spring, and we have all kinds of audio. In fact, I'm actually Kyle's over in The Hague right now in the Netherlands, and I'm actually watching him on a monitor. I'm watching all the people in this amazing hackerspace over there right now. I don't know if they're listening, but if they are, maybe they can wave or something like that. I'm not sure how long the delay is. Probably 20-minute delay, so it might take a while. But he's been touring around over there at various hacker events, and he'll be back here next week talking about all kinds of adventures he's had, including one he doesn't know he's going to have yet, where he has to travel between airports in London. That's going to be fun. You ever do that? You ever get a take? Oh, he's waving. Hey, how you doing, Kyle? Everyone's waving. Oh, how about that? You have an amazing hackerspace there. I'm looking at this place called RevSpace that you guys are in, and it's the size of a football field. It's incredible. They over there, they just get all these cool things, and we have to struggle to rent a closet. But I'm not complaining, because it just makes it all the more pleasant to visit over there. Anyway, this is he's got an amazing adventure ahead where he has to actually land at one airport in London and then hightail it to another airport to get his connecting flight. And it's kind of cool because for a couple of hours he'll be in England, but that's it, just on a subway or something. I've never done that. I've never actually, you're holding something up to the camera from across the ocean, and I can barely see it. Don't move your hand. I can maybe make it out. I'm only seeing one image every 5 seconds, so it's kind of difficult to make out what people are saying there. Anyway, to business tonight. We're going to be playing the final part of the Bosnia show. To recap where we left off, Kyle and I were on a train heading from Sarajevo in Bosnia to Belgrade in Serbia. Now, this train is very significant because it had been bombed to smithereens during the war and had only just been opened last December. And we were riding on this train in April, so it was very significant and very interesting, fascinating picturesque countryside, but also amazing conversations that we had on the train, one of which was with the staff, people who were cooking us breakfast and all kinds of things like that. And it was an amazing experience overall, but all kinds of passport checks and engine changes and things like that. And where we left it last week, we had just had to pay the bill for the breakfast that we had. It was a lot more than we thought, and it was kind of a shakedown, in fact, because they were just kind of asking for all kinds of different denominations of money, and we figured we probably spent about $50 between the two of us. But, you know, it's no big deal. It was part of the experience, and it was also rather pleasant. So if it was a shakedown, it was one of the more pleasant ones that I've been through. But there's so much more to come on this particular episode. Next week, we'll be back here live in the studio. And for now, let's go back to the train between Bosnia and Serbia. All right, wow, that was fun. We've been through a lot in the last couple of hours, actually. Let's see, we just had the shakedown in the cafeteria, well, in the cafe car, where we had to pay a lot of money. I mean, it wasn't a huge amount, but it was a good amount. They were just sort of rifling through and picking out currencies from our pockets. Well, not from our pockets, but we would pull things out, and they say, yeah, that's €10 and $20 bill, and the convertible marks, we'll take a few of those. And, oh, I don't know, it all looks so good. Let's just keep sampling them. I think we wound up paying, about $35-40.
Yeah, I think there was a hefty tip in there somewhere, and I think, you know, they wanted some ones, and then I think you got away with a couple ones that they almost took in addition to everything else you mentioned. So
yeah, I was a little worried because I pulled out 100 by accident, and I didn't want them to see that. And then, of course, we dealt with customs. So let's see, we trying to keep track of this. We had already entered Srpska Republic, which is part of Bosnia, but there wasn't any customs control there. But then we left, we left Bosnia and entered Croatia because you cut through Croatia. So then we had our passport stamped leaving Bosnia and again stamped entering Croatia. And just a few moments ago, we were kind of startled because we're inside our cabin now. Six seats facing each other, three seats facing each other, and a door that closes. And this guy came in and wanted to see our passport again. I couldn't figure out who he was. And he was Croatia again, but apparently we're leaving Croatia now.
Yeah, he must have jumped on at one of the stops and had been circulating in the past, the past couple kilometers, and then, got to us eventually. So he might get off the next stop. I don't know how that works exactly, but it did startle us.
Yeah, it startled because we weren't expecting that. And I didn't know who he was, what country he represented. But that means if we're leaving Croatia now, that means we're going to be entering Serbia soon. And another passport check. And also, the engines keep changing. The locomotives at the front of the train change whenever you go to a different a country. And within Bosnia, they change at the Srpska Republic, which is an autonomous region of Bosnia. So they stopped there. We switched locomotives then at the Croatian border, switched locomotives, and I imagine at the Serbian border we're going to switch locomotives. So it's been a ton of switching going on, lots of checks and things like that. And of course, then you have the conductors coming through checking your ticket every now and then. Actually, that's only happened twice, when we got on and in Bosnia, and we got off, when the Croatian conductor got on. And you got reprimanded, actually, while we were watching an engine being changed at the front of the train. This Croatian conductor climbed on board and immediately said something to you. What was it?
I had a cigar in my mouth, and he was upset, and in so few words in Croatian said, "Nyet, nyet, no cigarette," and read the sign. And there's another guy smoking, hanging out the window at this stop, and it probably was a rough start to this guy's day, and, you know, so he was pretty upset. And I said, it's good, you know, I know, and I put it away. And
well, you knew because you read the book that smoking is not allowed on trains in Croatia. It's kind of weird, but our train passing through Croatia, we cannot smoke. Well, we weren't smoking. You had a cigar that was still wrapped in plastic in your mouth. It was just like kind of a fun thing to do, but you had no intention of smoking it, but they're just, I guess, warning you.
Not at that very instant, no. I wasn't going to smoke it, but I did have it, you know, out on my person. So.
We almost used it as a present for the guy who was serving us food because we thought we were going to get a really good deal. We only got, it was a great food, but, you know, the price was kind of high. But, you know, that's the kind of thing that happens. You can't get yourself... bent out of shape over these things, as I said. It's just a fun experience, and we're doing well. We're doing fun. Still a bunch of hours away from Belgrade, but the train ride remains fun. But let's go back to Sarajevo. Not literally. Boy, that would be something. And this train goes back to Sarajevo. Wait a minute. Does this train go back to Sarajevo? That's impossible. We saw this train arrive last night. That means there must be two trains. Otherwise, how could the train possibly... arrive. We saw the train arrive what time yesterday? Around 5 p.m.
I believe it was 10 after 6, actually.
Okay, around 6 o'clock. And obviously, this train is not going to be anywhere near Sarajevo at 6 o'clock. It's around, I don't know what time it is now, but it's afternoon. And we're heading towards Belgrade. So that means there's a second train. I hadn't thought about that, which means, well, we're going to pass that train at some point. Or maybe we already did.
Or we may yet. Yeah, we may have already.
So. Are we past the halfway point?
That's
so hard,
yeah,
to say. I don't know. All the locomotives and conductors and passport control things going on. It's very hard to lose track of where you are and what you're doing. And so that, getting back to Sarajevo, that's how we felt. I think where we left it, we had just been panhandled rather aggressively by a couple of juveniles who just stretched out their hands to us. And,
speaking of shakedowns.
Yeah, it wasn't anything all that threatening, but to us, just getting off a bus... in a very dark area in a city we weren't at all familiar with, not knowing where we were going, having no money and having just had a fight with an ATM. We felt a little vulnerable. And basically, my advice at that point was just move assertively in a particular direction towards where they looked like there were lights. And it turned out we were moving in the right direction. What was particularly funny, though, was that right next to us, was the tallest building in, I believe, in the Balkan countries, maybe even in a good part of Europe. The tallest building was right there because it was pointed out to us in the days following. There's the tallest building. It was a mere feet away, and we didn't see it. We did not see that building because we just had our eyes downwards, and we were just trying to get across the street to a place where it looked like there were people.
And as we said, it was quite dark, right? I mean, we really couldn't see very much, and anything it was reflecting was probably dark sky. So.
Was it raining? Was it cloudy? Maybe we couldn't see the building?
I think it was fairly, maybe slightly overcast, but, you know, fairly clear. It was just very, very dark at that particular part of the town. So.
Well, you could walk past the Empire State Building and not realize you're walking past it because you're not looking up. But then the Empire State Building has a lot of buildings around it. This had no buildings around it, and it was far enough away for you to be able to see. I don't know. We just weren't really paying attention to that. We were thinking, how do we get to our hostel? And what we did was we simply walked to a place that said hotel and decided that we were going to just somehow try and get information as to how to get to the place we were going to. And we knew that was going to be difficult because even in the book it said, tell the taxi driver to go to this address, and if he can't find it, tell him to go to this address instead, or something like that. Apparently, it wasn't easy to find. So we basically just lugged all our stuff. When I say we lugged all our stuff, we travel light. I have two bags. You have two bags. It's not a lot. It's not like a crazy amount of luggage. But still, you're encumbered when you're walking through the streets with it, and you can't really move fast. So we lugged our stuff over to the entrance of this hotel, and just as we got there... this guy came out of the hotel and started locking the door. Like, this was it for the night. And that's... He looked at me, I looked at him, and I just walked up to him with a piece of paper that had the address on it. And I think it was good the way that worked out, because I was going to go in there. And it's always kind of weird when you go into a hotel and ask directions to another place to stay. I mean, you know, usually people tell you, but it just seems a little rude. But in any event, this guy came out, and I was able to ask him outside where it was, and he invited us in. So he could figure it all out for us. And he really figured it out, made some phone calls, got another person at the hotel who spoke English to help us and even called us a cab. Now, of course, we were trying to explain that we didn't have any money. Well, we had money, but it was the wrong kind of money. And we had to sort of explain how can we pay for this when we don't have Bosnian currency. We have Croatian currency, which, of course, is no good in Bosnia. He said that they would take euros, and that seemed a relief. We took the cab. The cab knew where to go, and he asked for a certain amount of euros. And that's when we found out that they didn't take euro coins. They only took euro bills, which I found to be tremendously inconvenient. But I think the cab driver probably found it to be more inconvenient because he couldn't take what we had or didn't want to take what we had. In the end, though, we gave him the euro coins. He agreed to accept those, but we also gave him some dollars on top of that. So I think he was happy.
Yeah, he held it up. He was sort of like bravo, and he had a kind of extra hop in his step. So he seemed like satisfied with what we gave him.
And we found our hostel, and it was a very nice place. We stayed there. And then, you know, I said to Kyle, you know, this is a rough landing. We kind of knew it was going to be weird and strange, but we're going to make it through this. Sticking together, we know where we're going. There's no real, like, danger here, just a little strange and alien. And tomorrow, it's going to be completely different. We're going to look back on this and have a totally different perspective of this very same area. And I don't know. Do you think that happened fairly soon?
Absolutely. I think that rings, you know, quite true. I mean, I was really, really anxious getting in here, especially because this town had been surrounded, and I spoke to this a little bit before, that there was a lot of fighting going on here, and we were seeing a lot of buildings that had holes and repairs and smoke from fire, and, you know, it was really tough to put that all aside and feel at ease. So, you know, it worked eventually to see it during the daytime, to meet someone who's from the town, to go and watch the call to prayer, to see a mosque, and see how, you know, everyday and normal that is in this city. Gosh, you know, it really made it an average kind of normal, you know, fully acceptable experience instead of all this garbage I was filling in my head, in part due to the research we did. We researched a lot of the stuff about, you know, the war and the past 15 years, but, you know, I was able to shed a lot of that as we saw things during the day and, you know, had some food and really got into the culture and tried to really throw ourselves into the hustle and bustle and be a part of it and you know, sort of feel a little more graceful instead of sort of landing kind of haphazard and you know, the cover of darkness kind of thing. So,
well, the very first thing we did the next morning was just walk across the street. We were in the old part of town, the Turkish part, they call it, and we just sort of were stunned. We walked down these really old stone streets. And it was just such a hustle and bustle of activity. A lot of people in turbans, a call to prayer, as you mentioned, was echoing every place. And we just realized we're in a very different place. This is not like the Europe we're familiar with. Yet it was a very positive, energetic, vibrant place. And we just fell in love with it, I think, immediately, just standing there. And then eventually we went to a cafe and got some double espressos and just sort of sat there for hours just watching people go by. That's what you do. You just relax and watch people go by. People next to you start talking to you. You find out where they're from, learn things about their culture, about this culture, about your own culture. And you just relax and you feel great afterwards.
Yeah, and we also got around that morning after we'd sat and sort of taken things in and, you know, relaxed a little bit, got comfortable, got a good coffee rush going for the start. We were able to start marching around a bit, and we really nailed a couple things. I mean, we were able to go over to the World War One Museum that day. We also passed by one of the only major synagogues in town, which is an interesting place to be considering the population and how that's changed over the years.
I didn't think it was so easy to find the actual spot where World War One started, and that was where the heir to the Austrian throne was assassinated by a young Serb. We found the actual spot, and of course that started declaration of war against Serbia because they were blamed for the assassination, and then that led to World War One, which led to World War Two. We found the Marco Market massacre site. We found World War II monument.
The Eternal Flame, yes.
Big Eternal Flame. We wandered around looking for all kinds of other things and just noticing unplanned sites at the same time.
Yes, you were interested in this tunnel museum, and if we couldn't make it, I believe it closed at 4, and you know, we had done all this other stuff, and we didn't catch the tram out to where you're supposed to link up to the museum for the tunnel. We didn't do that till about 5, so it was already closed, but we did want to stake it out, and we ended up on this really awesome impromptu journey. It was cool.
I want to get to the impromptu journey, but first, you mentioned getting on the tram to go out there. That was a challenge right there, because we didn't know exactly how the tram... You never know how the trams work. They're different in every city. And in this particular case, we were told we had to pay the tram driver. We couldn't see anybody doing this. We couldn't figure out how people got on, how people got off, where they canceled their tickets. In fact, it was so difficult because these trams were overcrowded with people. We couldn't even figure out how to get on physically, let alone what to do once we got on. So we had to stand there and just watch several trams go by and see what people did. That's how out of it we were. And eventually, what did we do? We just forced our way on.
We even stuffed ourselves in a few of them just to get the sense of how it all works and
we
get
on one tram, and I was like right by the door, and it kept smacking me in the face every time it opened. But we couldn't get to any place to buy a ticket, and we certainly couldn't get a place to cancel a ticket.
And eventually we were able to get on at the front and indicate, you know, that we wanted a ticket. And it's very interesting. They have magstripe tickets, but it's distributed by the driver from a stack, and he just sort of peels off however many tickets you pay for. And you know, at that point, then we had to, you know, find the machine to validate it.
Well, he didn't give you a change either. You gave him money and he just gave you the tickets with no change. I don't know if that was policy or he just was in a bad mood. But yeah, he gave us, and then he's driving the tram and he's counting stuff while he's driving the tram. It's very, I don't know how many jobs he has at the same time.
I think he was taking people's change and counting out beer money for after work, but that's my opinion.
Yeah, no, I agree with that opinion. I think something untoward is going on. But yeah, as you said, we had these magstripe tickets, and they look really nice. I mean, they're equivalent to the paper tickets you get in the New York City system, you know, not the plastic metro cars, but if you get a transfer from a bus, it's like that. It's a bit much for just a single. I guess it's the same thing in New York. It's a single ride. You don't use it again. But it just seemed like a bit of a waste. I mean, you couldn't transfer. You could only use it on that tram. If you got off and got on the next one, you had to get another ticket. There's no all day pass. You know, it just seems like basically they should let you on. You pay, and then you're on the tram, and that's it. That's why even give you a ticket at that point? That seemed like a bit of overkill. But anyway, we wound up out near where the tunnel museum allegedly was, and that's where we did something really incredible. We just started walking. We just started walking in Kyle, what you said was dead reckoning, the direction of where you figured things were, and we got something, I think, a lot more valuable just by walking through what turned out to be a rather small town within Sarajevo and seeing the people and the houses and the vehicles going by. And that's the kind of thing that tourists just don't do. It's the kind of thing you come in, if you even manage to make it to Sarajevo, it's the kind of thing I think a lot of people wouldn't know how to do.
Yeah, to break away from a book or a tour guide or something official, it's kind of difficult for people, and I really like doing that kind of thing personally, especially when I have someone to share it with. It, you know, you get a little more confidence and brave, especially in such a foreign place. And I think at that point we knew the tunnel wasn't going to be open, but we did want to see how close we could get to it, or if we could even see it, and if it's really, you know, worth visiting. And maybe all there is to see is just where it, you know, where it was.
The tunnel being the place where people escaped under the runway into a free zone, so they wouldn't have to deal with snipers shooting down from the mountains. You'd get to this 1 meter wide tunnel. And run 800 meters through it, or walk 800 meters through it to the other side. And we wanted to see that. We wanted to see that bit of history, but couldn't really find it. Actually, your dead reckoning was pretty dead on, because we found out the next day we were just a couple of blocks away. It wasn't open anyway when we went the first time, but we saw it again. But, I, you know, the actual walking through that small area and seeing how people really live, that's the real Sarajevo, the real Bosnia, the real human experience.
Yeah, you know, it ended up being really valuable. I had a sense of where the airport was, and I was seeing small aircraft come in and land, and I was getting a decent sense of where the buses were headed. And at the time, you weren't aware that this was part of getting to the tunnel, is that you were to stop at the tram and then get on a bus. So I was recognizing the bus numbers that were going by. I knew we were on the route that the book had said, you know, this is where to find this tunnel. At any rate, we...
I thought you were just bus spotting and saying, hey, there's a 32 and a 68. And,
absolutely.
Yeah. But it was, you know, it was a nice walk either way. But what you were doing was actually was following what we were supposed to be doing. And I thought we had already done that by getting off the tram. But it was... The walk was something not to be missed. I'm glad we didn't get on the bus.
And we ended up walking down sort of the backside of a couple acres behind three farmhouses, and walked right up against the border fence for the airport there, and just watched some planes take off. At this point, it was really getting beautiful. It was late afternoon, early evening. The sun was coming down below the cloud line, and the hills. I mean, you've got houses up in the hills. You've got a really lush spring vegetation and landscape coming in, you know, for the summer. And it was just so beautiful, the way the haze and the sunlight hit it from the west, and just made those hills just look beautiful, just so round and lush. You know, you just, you feel like you could reach out and grab it. So we shot some really good photographs and watched the planes and kind of just stood there and took it in, kind of waited for the sun to come down a little more. And it was an awesome moment for us to realize that, you know, we don't need any kind of structure to find our own way, to carve out the kind of trip that we want to have. And I think that really captures the essence of what we're about on these kinds of adventures. So
we interacted with the natives a little bit. We basically nodded as we passed by people. One person thought that we were from Slovenia.
Yeah, I really enjoy that. I've been in other countries, and you know, Brussels, I was cased out as a Dutchman, and I gladly accepted that. And here he said we were Slovenian. I always take note of that and remember, you know, okay, I could pass for a Slovenian now.
Someone at the train station thought we were Hungarian.
Yeah, and then subsequently, somebody thought we were Hungarians. So it's always good to be mindful of how you appear. It's much better than being blatantly this, that, or the other thing from, dare I say, Canada or the U.S. To be thought of as somebody who's, you know, just a couple countries away. It's really sort of, it's kind of a nice compliment, in my opinion.
Well, I like to say New York to them, and the response I've gotten so far invariably is just like, oh, wow, someone from New York is here, and they're intrigued. No hostility, no suspicion, and usually they know somebody in the United States. We've met people who had relatives in Colorado, New Jersey, Utah even, all kinds of places, and someone always knows something about a part of the United States. And I think that's kind of cool. And some kind of customs guy just walked by and saw me with a microphone. But that was that the same guy that just walked by, or was that a different one? I don't think the Serbs have gotten the chance to get on the train because we haven't really stopped.
No.
But he walked to the front, so he might be coming back. I think it might be wise to sign off for a little while.
Yeah.
And come back after we cross into Serbia see what happened there. But yeah, a few more descriptions of Sarajevo and some experiences we had. Can't recommend this place highly enough because there's just so much to see and so much to learn.
Yeah, we'll put a bookmark there, but it really was beautiful just standing there and taking it in. And we eventually made our way back and got a beer and just sort of got ready for a nice evening there. So.
Yeah, all right, one more border crossing, one more locomotive. Let's see how it goes.
Sabornik. Emisija za naše građane u dijaspori.
Je imala godina, koliko koto vekova, u sebe sam je sakrio, kostrogu tajnu čuvao, kako usnama miluje, kako prstima žal. Zemlju snova smo otišli, kupine poljubcima delili. Bila je kraljica dodira, moja radost noćima. Kako usnama miluje, kako prstima šapuće. Kako usnama miluje, prsti maša će. Čarobnjak je bila, u kosi je krila opojne mirise. Stalno se sećam, kotoru vraćam da opet osjetim. Kako usnama miluje, kako prstima šapuće. Kako usnama miluje, kako prstima šapuće.
Well, we have now crossed into Serbia. We had our final passport check, our final engine change. We're now moving a lot faster because I think the rails are in better shape here in Serbia. And I guess that was the most intense of the passport checks so far.
Yeah, that was really different. I was looking at the officer's badge. It was in completely in Cyrillic. He was asking us a little bit about where we're going, and he came back and requested both of our passports. Actually, he was looking at mine, and then he requested to have yours as well, and took them for a little bit. Excuse me.
Gesundheit.
Sorry about that. I have mild allergies and hay fever, so there you go.
Yeah, it's really something to see the size of your head change as we go through different parts of these countries.
Would you stop? All right. Yeah. Okay. So you get a little congested, a little inflamed. Yeah. But you know what? They have medication for this. I know when it's coming.
That was our final ticket check. I wasn't expecting that either. Another person ripped open the door and wanted documentation from us, but three times we get the tickets checked.
Yeah, we've had quite a bit of this. A lot of interrupting, a lot of doors opening and closing, and people checking things back and forth. It's been really, really interesting to see all the transitions, all the changes, but, you know, I'm getting a lot more used to it. And, yeah, so this guard came in, you know, completely, you know, decked out, Serbian uniform, everything. Took our passports briefly, and then is that a jackrabbit?
Yeah, what is that? That is one huge rabbit. I don't know what you mean by jackrabbit, but that rabbit's the size of a dog, I think. If that was a rabbit, it looked like a rabbit.
Yeah, it just meant big rabbit. Yeah, I don't know. That was interesting. Sorry, yeah.
Because a jackass is a big ass. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, okay, I already, yeah, it's a rabbit.
Interesting. I mean, was that what that was? Because a friend of mine told me he saw a rabbit that was as big as a dog once, and I just suggested he confine himself to Bellevue, and I guess I just saw the same thing.
I thought it was a dog, and then, you know, you were looking while I was talking, and then I noticed the same thing. And
the way he ran was like a rabbit, though. It was in the distance. We were looking at farm fields, and he was running. But a dog wouldn't be running across a farm field like that.
Yeah, I don't know. That's the kind of thing you see out here in the countryside in Serbia.
Well, maybe somebody from Serbia can confirm that you do, in fact, have rabbits as big as dogs.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I'd like to hear that as well, if we can get somebody to let us know.
Well, but anyway, yes, as you were saying, we have had a plethora of people come through here. Just to give people a sense of what we are, where we are, we're in a little cabin. It's got, I think we already described this, three seats facing each other. The door can close, the window can close. We can have a completely, almost silent little sound booth here. Of course, the window is open now, so we can have some air and a little bit of sound. The door just slides open occasionally. It might be somebody wanting to see the ticket. It might be somebody wanting to see our passport. It might be the guy wanting to know if we want more food. Various other people visiting, just coming by. Usually you're in here with six people or five other people. But we're lucky we have the whole thing to ourselves.
Yeah, you were remarking about how distinct it is to have such space. You don't get that in Germany and other European countries, so it was really cool to note that.
Yeah, so a lot more people ride the trains up there, so they're almost always packed and crowded. We were in the restaurant car, and we were the only ones there, except for the people making food for us. So I think it's a big deal when somebody actually goes and buys food. Nobody else was buying food. Everyone else brings their own food. And of course, you know, it's a lot cheaper to do that, to bring your own. You share it with the people in your cabin. And it's more of the train experience, but we just felt like, what the hell, let's just break out and get something nice, and it was well worth it, I think. But anyway, so we're in Sarajevo heading towards Belgrade, but we want to talk about Sarajevo, correct?
Yeah, at any rate, he wished us luck, and we're on our way now to Sarajevo.
Where are we? I don't know what country we're in anymore. Yeah, we're heading towards Belgrade, but we want to talk about
Sarajevo.
From Sarajevo.
And we were
wow. He's got some issues up there. It's a totally different engine, obviously, totally different horn, much more authoritarian, I think.
Yes, that was quite a horn. Anyway, we had just stopped.
In Sarajevo, what had we just done?
We had just stopped our conversation at that. That moment we shared in some rural parts of Sarajevo.
Walking towards the tunnel museum or towards the airport.
Well, we had spent some time and looked at the sun a little bit as it was setting, and then we had walked our way back towards the tram. We had a beer and some coffee. That was an interesting interaction, actually.
Well, we went to the place and asked for beer and didn't quite get the response we were expecting.
No, we didn't. And I was a little mortified in that instant. I had really anticipated a beer, and, you know, you had asked me, are you sure they sell beer? I was, you know, seeing coolers and bottles. I didn't look closely. And obviously, he didn't look closely enough, and he said, no alcohol.
Yeah, because it was a Muslim establishment.
Yeah, you get this in Sarajevo, and I think you got to be sensitive to it. And I think I was a little overly sensitive. And you really helped me get out of my head about it. I was getting kind of feeling kind of, you know, upset. You know, we'd done a lot of walking. I was really tired, and frankly, a cold beer sounded great. But be that as it may, we drank the coffee, we paid and left, and we went to another place. And over that beer, we had an interesting discussion, and I really came full circle. I came to the realization that how interesting is it that you have one cafe here and one across the little shopping center, and, you know, many others in the same vicinity, and one does not serve alcohol. They have, you know, some sort of soda branded awning, and then you have a beer branded awning, and they share the same space. And it dawned on me, in all likelihood, the guy serving us the beer could very well have been Muslim and not drink alcohol himself, but he simply worked at a bar and that was his job. And they're more than happy to serve you if you go to that establishment, and vice versa, you will not get it, and it's just sort of the norm at the other establishment. And I marveled, this is a microcosm at, you know, of our world, and that, you know what, it's not so polarized, black or white. And considered, I really tried on in my head, I considered the possibility that there's a range of everything in between. And it's not just that there is a no alcohol establishment and that there is an alcohol establishment. It dawned on me to sort of drop the attitude, drop sort of feeling upset about what I had done, but really have a breakthrough in the fact that, like, there could be, you know, soda in some instances if you're an alcohol drinker. And pardon us, that was the train again. You could have soda in one instance, and then, you know, likewise, you could have someone who is Muslim, you know, that perhaps views their faith in a less sort of strict way. Maybe they do partake and enjoy some alcohol. And that really helped me understand, and I really had an epiphany at that point. I realized, you know what, there's gray areas. And you mentioned, this was great, what did you say? You said, I believe you said, you know, it's possible that they can coexist. I'm losing the thought exactly, but you said something very poignant, like, you know, this was awesome. No, this is exactly what you said. You're pointing this out, and I'm thinking, you know, I had made some enormous faux pas, and it was so dead on, because here I was having this epiphany, and you were right there, and you said, you know, they're probably more upset at each other. Someone from the same faith, perhaps a Muslim that goes and has alcohol, they would probably be more upset and have more to say about that than you, you know, making some mistake of, you know, ordering alcohol in a coffee bar. You're like, let it go. You know, imagine what it's like if you're actually Muslim and you go to a coffee bar and you ask for beer because you're oblivious or whatever, you know, and this probably happens all the time. And it really gave me some encouragement to be like, you know what, this is a culture. This is not some staccato binary, you know, where everything is very, one way or the other. It's fluid. These are people. This is culture. And people experiment. They try things. I'm sure there's Muslims that you know, kind of that wander from the path. In Christianity, we might say the prodigal son. And, you know, that parable and whatnot, or a Bible story, I don't even know what it is, but it's a often referenced thing when teenagers are kind of rebelling and going through these phases. So I don't know if you have anything else to add, but that moment was really special to me. And it was also really nice, he plopped down an entire bowl of peanuts, and we were able to have this discussion and share peanuts before we made our way back on the tram.
Yeah, we had so many really just cool discussions and philosophies like espoused over beers and coffees and things like that. And that's the kind of thing you can do in a place like Sarajevo. Just go from one place to another. We went to the Tito Cafe, which was all about Marshal Tito, who ran Yugoslavia during the communist era. A really interesting person, really interesting country during that period of time. And you learn a lot about the history and how things changed over the years. It's vital to do this kind of thing, to just plunge into the culture, to make mistakes, to experiment, to try different things, to go off the beaten path, not just stick to a tour book, and not to be surprised when things don't always go the way you want them to go, and not to let that affect you. It's part of whatever path you wind up on. Like yesterday, for instance, we were trying to figure out how to get onto Off the Hook. We were wandering around all over the place, trying to find a payphone that they could call us at. And it was an incredible series of challenges because, well, first of all, we had to find out the phone number of a payphone. They didn't have phone numbers written on them. So we had to call a friend of ours in Sarajevo from the payphone so he could see the payphone number. And okay, great. Now we are at the payphone. We're going to call him. But guess what? The payphone doesn't take coins.
And so, not just that one. None of them take coins.
None of them take coins. So what we had to do was wander around, look for one maybe that did take coins. We found one that just had a pile of used cards instead. And Kyle, this is to your credit. You decided, I'm going to try all these cards and see if there's any money left on all of them. And we inserted one, it said zero. We inserted another, it said zero. We inserted a third, it said 14. We didn't know what the 14 meant, but we dialed his number, and it showed 3 minutes counting down. So we were able to have enough on that card to actually call him. We called him, let it ring. He was supposed to call us back, and the phone didn't ring. So then afterwards, I called him again, and he said, yeah, you know, I tried calling it and just got a fast busy. So apparently it doesn't take incoming calls, and apparently none of the payphones take incoming calls. So that's yet another challenge that we had. We had no way of getting a call at a payphone. And, of course, a landline sounds better than a cell phone, and I didn't have a Bosnian SIM card in my cell phone so I could use it. But what I had to do was go and buy a Bosnian SIM, stick it in my phone, and use that for the show. So little challenges like that, you can't let distract you too much. We're all the time this was happening while we're preparing the show, we also were aware that we were starving and we wanted to get food and we didn't want things to close. But another horn, two horns.
Oh no, I was just blowing my nose.
No, not you. I heard one horn, I heard a second horn, which means, and we didn't pass a train, and that means that this guy has two different kinds of horns. Wow, that's interesting. I just learned something. And we're passing a train crossing, which is why all the horn blowing. So anyway, we were wandering around, getting a little bit desperate. And there were other issues, too. We didn't have enough cash. We had to go to an ATM. I had that incident with the ATM earlier. Some places take plastic. Some places don't take plastic. So we were wandering around, getting money, buying SIM cards, figuring out how to make the phone call later on.
Might I add, this was an evening. We had a full moon.
Yeah, there's that too. I don't know how much credence we're going to put into that, but so we were walking around, and you know, keenly aware that places are starting to put chairs up on tables and things like that. And I hate when that happens. I hate when you're in a strange place, you just want to find food, and the longer you don't get it, the less chance you have of finding something. So we just were wandering around, and we were also noticing that everybody's watching football on TV. Everybody's watching football. Soccer to us, and we just wound up in this place that was a small place filled with local people, a lot of whom were smoking. You hear that? Two horns.
No, I know what you're talking about.
Two horns. One horn, second horn.
Wow.
I've never heard anybody do that before. This guy's got multi-talent. He's driving a train. He's blowing a deep horn and a second horn. And it must mean something, too. One horn means one thing. The second horn means another thing. Who knows? Anyway, so back to getting food in Sarajevo. We went into this place. There were people smoking. We dealt with that. Not a big fan of smoke, but okay, you know what? Put that aside for a little while. And we had amazing food, a bunch to drink, dessert. And the whole thing was... No, he only did one that time. I was hoping to get both. But anyway... we had all this food, appetizer, beers, dessert. And the whole thing came to about $40 for two people, which was incredible. And it was... You see, now that I'm being quiet, he's not doing the second horn. I don't know what it means. But anyway, throughout this, there was a game on inside the place. There was a game on inside every place. And we were trying to gauge which team they were rooting for, because neither team was local. One was Inter Milan and the other was Barcelona. And the irony of that was that it was the same game that we saw at JFK Airport where we were waiting to leave to fly into Zagreb. Now, it was part of the, I believe, the Champions League here in Europe. And the way that works is that in the... semifinals or quarterfinals, not sure which this is, Basically, one team plays another team at their home field, then they play again at the other team's home field, and they add the scores up. They add the scores together, and that's the winner. So let's say you win 3-0 the first game, and then the other team beats you 2-0 the second game. Well, you still win because it's 3-2. And I think we might get people joining us here. So I'm going to try to wrap this part up pretty quickly. So we were trying to figure out what team they were rooting for, and it turned out they were rooting for Barcelona because there's a Bosnian player on Barcelona. So that was kind of cool. Hung out in this place, had a great time, watched a football game with all these locals, and had some smoke fill our lungs. Okay, you know, once in a while, that's all right. It was fun. I'm going to resume this after all these people get on. Anything we should say?
Oh, no, I just thought it was really, really cool how they paid us very little mind, and we were able to sit down and join the game, and it was a follow-up to our embarking on this trip. So it was really, really special, a special way to end the evening and gear up for a late night with Off the Hook, given all the challenges it took to coordinate communications.
Yeah, and after that, we just walked around through the streets for Off the Hook on our little cell phone, talking to people. You may have heard the whistle. This is throughout Europe. They just blow a whistle, and that signals the train to move. And maybe nobody will join us in our compartment, in which case we're somewhat free. I don't know what else we can say about Sarajevo that we haven't already said. It's just we plunged into it, and we learned so much. We did things tourists don't usually do. We weren't put off by the setbacks and the unplanned things. Look at that, buses on a train. Isn't that something? We're passing we just passed a bunch of freight cars that had buses on them. That was awful. I was just wondering why we were passing a series of buses instead of freight cars.
That was really strange.
That was strange, wasn't it? I didn't get a picture of it, but I got audio of it.
Yeah, I wonder if they moved to a different part of the city. They were on like a freight flatbed or something, and they had their electrical lines above. Maybe they're transporting to another part of town.
They must be transporting.
They look particularly new, or like they'd packaged them or anything. They're just sitting on this flat.
No, not that time either. Wave at the kids. Yeah, this is something we always do, is wave at people out of trains and buses, because I learned that in North Korea. It's just it thrills people no end to have strangers wave at them.
I had a kid throw a rock at me when I tried it.
Yeah, you know, you tried it once, and this kid just heaved a rock at the train. And he had it on him already, so he was ready to do this. It was rather shocking. But apparently some people don't like trains passing by them. Any final thoughts on Sarajevo before we continue on this train to Belgrade?
You know, it's a really interesting city. We had a really good guide that had contacted us through the magazine and the radio shows.
Sonjan, thank you so much.
And he showed us a lot of the history, and then was able to comment on a lot of the technology, a lot of the newer buildings, a lot of how things were able to recoup and regroup as the decade progressed. I guess the last 15 years they've been trying to get back to normal, and one of the interesting things is the American embassy. As we were leaving, we saw this embassy being built, and obviously, you know, this country, Bosnia, is importance on is a place of importance on the world stage here, and it'd be interesting to see what happens there as things move on into the future. And we walked past this embassy that they're building, and walked right past the very same tram tracks and gravel that we had been sort of hustling through on our way out. And I remarked, you know, I feel so much better now. This is easy. Having kind of gotten our sea legs and gotten familiar and met people, ate wonderful food, stayed in an amazing hostel that was very much like being at home, very small, only three bedrooms in it. It just felt much different. It was a stark contrast to having landed there in sort of a little bit of a disarray and being a little out of sorts and guarded. I felt so free leaving and saying, you know what, whatever's next, wherever we're going, it's going to be as amazing, and really kind of check some of those, some of that anxiety, some of those preconceptions, preconceived notions.
There you go.
Check those notions at the gate, at the border, and really be open to what's possible, be open to the people, be open to the culture, and it's a tremendous learning experience. So that's my thought, is I went in kind of anxious, kind of knowing the history, knowing what they had been through, really unsure and unsure of myself, and then leaving feeling like so welcome, like I'd be totally open to coming back, so full of information and a sense of how it is there. And, you know, people ask me if I go home and in the future I'll be able to refer to this experience and look back and say, wow, I know what's going on in Bosnia right now, more or less. So it's,
but it means a lot to the people there that we pay attention to what's going on in their land. But you reminded me, speaking of just going around and having a tour guide drive us occasionally. Well, I mean, a listener. I refer to people as tour guides because that's not really their role, but it's an incredible way to see the city. We were on top of one of the hills looking down, and these are the hills where snipers used to set up shop and pick off people in the streets below. Horrible, horrible memories. But we were just standing there at night and looking down at the city, so peaceful. You could hear the river, and you could hear dogs everywhere barking. More dogs than I've ever heard in my life. Just every part of town barking at each other. And then you're in another part of town, and there's nothing but cats there, stray cats all over the place. And that's incredible visions that stick with you. You never know what you're going to see in places like this. And that's why it's good to read the history, it's good to read the tour books, but always expect something completely different, crazy, unplanned, unexpected, and run with it. And you'll have a great time.
Agreed. So on to the next.
Yeah. Where are we going again?
We're on our way to Belgrade.
Right. Okay. Here we go.